My guest is Dr. Ajaz Naqvi, practicing physician, former president of the Islamic Center in the San Francisco Bay Area, and has written a book called The Quran, With or Against the Bible. Would you say now, after what happened last week, that what the Muslim society, the Muslim culture, the Muslim religion needs to do now more than anything is to somehow let America know, if not the world know, that that these gentlemen, the Tsarnaev brothers, are not fair representatives of that particular religion? I would assume that that is job one at this point, isn't it?
It is. In fact, has been since 9/11. And the only problem is when these Islamic societies or organizations speak out, they just don't get the same press as someone who is a violent extremist. So if I were to just say something really filthy and a hateful thing, I probably will be in the news. But if I'm talking about how peaceful it is and so on and so forth, or condemning these terrorists, it somehow just doesn't seem as newsworthy. There have been fatwas or the religious edicts all over the Islamic world against terrorism, specifically against suicide bombing, and we don't hear about them as much. And so one of the things I always remind people is there are 1.6 billion Muslims on planet Earth. And so, sure, there are many evil Muslims who are ready to kill anyone, including their own likes. And even if there are, like, say, a million of them or 10 million of them, that's still a very, very small minority. Unfortunately, they are the most vocal and they are the ones who get the most press.
You know, one of the things that is often discussed, Dr. Naqvi, when as you just mentioned, there are some Muslims who believe that they can die in the process, that they're going to take somebody or something out and they can die in the process. And what's always talked about is their perception of what the afterlife is and how much better it will be than their current life. Is that a fair depiction of what goes on in the Muslim religion?
Not the Muslim religion. And now, is this something in their mind? Who knows? I've yet to talk to a terrorist, and I'd love to get into the mind of these terrorists and see what exactly is it that they're thinking. And how are they justifying what they are doing? Because, you know, the teachings of the Quran, the teachings of Islam, the teachings of Prophet Muhammad are just the opposite. You hurt someone, and it says very clearly, if you want God to be kind and merciful and forgiving to you, you need to be kind and merciful and forgiving to others.
So,
and you cannot hurt anyone. And if you hurt someone, don't ask God for forgiveness. Ask that person for forgiveness first.
This perception that is often perpetrated, though, whereas if they die in the process, that they will go to a heaven that will offer them a certain amount of virgins and all that. Where does that come from exactly?
I have seen that many times, the 70 virgins, and I have to search and search and search, and I have yet to find where that 70 virgin reward is coming from. Like I said, I'll be happy to talk to any one of them and find out where they are drawing these inspirations from. But I've yet to also either see or hear an individual or a cleric who actually has said that. But he hear this secondhand, but I have yet to hear it firsthand from a cleric.
Before the news, Dr. Naqvi, we were talking about Muhammad and how he lived his life. And you told the story about a woman that was throwing garbage at him. And then when she wasn't there anymore, he went and helped her. And, you know, he cleaned up the place where she lived. All right. So if Muhammad lived that way, why the extreme belief that if anybody is to in any way say anything negative about him, or I'm sure you know about the cartoonist that drew some cartoons of him and had his life threatened because of it? How did it escalate to that?
Yeah, and again, once again, I have to find a justification in the Quran. There might be one weekly narrated hadith, which is the saying of the Prophet. But if you look at some of the authentic sayings that people can trust and have a strong basis, or the teachings of the Quran, the teachings are just the opposite. But on the other hand, coming back to my thought about, you know, the majority, the silent majority. So, yeah, there were people who were rallying, and there were some of them were violent. But even if you put them all together, that's still not more than 10, 20, 30 million people. But unfortunately, just like, you know, the squeaky wheel catch the oil, and they get the most press. So people don't see what the silent majority is thinking or talking about. And I'll give another example. When I heard some of these protests, one of our local imams was Sheikh Hamza Yusuf was quoting this hadith that one day Prophet Muhammad was walking along with his young wife Aisha, and people started to taunt at him, and then they said to him in Arabic the word "Assalamu alaikum," but they said "Samu alaikum," which actually means, rather than peace be unto you, it means death be unto you. Hearing that, Aisha got very furious, and she said, "Well, death be unto you too, and may God's curse be on you." So hearing this, Prophet Muhammad said, "Aisha, calm down. God loves those who are lenient." So Aisha said, "Oh, did you hear what they said?" And Prophet Muhammad said, "Well, did you hear what I said?" So, you know, those kinds of examples, when I hear about them, and I wonder why people do act violently when they hear that. Like I said, I have not read this in the Quran. I have studied the Quran several times and not found it. And there are many other examples. When the Prophet Muhammad migrated, fearing his life, and he had to actually flee in the middle of the night. Now, remember, he was named or nicknamed Sadiq or Amin in Arabic, meaning the most trustworthy and the most truthful mm-hmm. by his pagan Arabs.
Mm-hmm.
But he was given this nickname because he would keep all their jewelry and all the other valuables without any agreement or contract. And when they ask, and they will, he will give it back to them. So they named him the most trustworthy and the most truthful. Now, when he fled, he still had a lot of possessions. So he had a good excuse, but he instructed his cousin that once he gets to Medina, to return every valuable back to the same people who were after his life. Again, there are many examples I can go on and on that his personal examples show kindness and mercy even to his worst enemy,
yeah.
Let alone his fellow, quote-unquote, regular person.
May I ask you, you said a little while ago, Dr. Naqvi, that there are, I think you said 1.6 billion Muslims worldwide, but that many of them have not read the Quran. Why would that be? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, so what I mean is that they have not read the Quran cover to cover in their language.
Oh,
everyone
okay.
has read this in Arabic, but yeah. They don't understand it. And unfortunately, I was like them until 20 years ago. And that's when I started to study in English cover to cover. And that's when I started to put things together. For example, my own misconceptions about Jewish-Christian relationship changed. There are many verses, and I'll quote some, that says that those who have attained to faith, which is a typical reference to Muslims, and those who are Jewish and those who are Sabians and Christians, anyone who believes in God and the last day and does righteous deeds, they will have no fear on the day of judgment, neither shall they grieve, and they shall have their reward from their Lord. Now, that's a black and white verse, and there are actually more than one verse like that. And he talks about a Muslim being a believer and a submitter, contrary to the common belief that Muslim is somebody who just believes in Muhammad.
Mm-hmm.
But a Jew and a Christian actually can be a Muslim because they are submitters. And again, there are many misconceptions around, even among some of the Muslims. Another word that I'll quote quickly is it's about the interfaith dialogue, and it says, "Do not argue with the people of the book." It's a reference to the Jews and the Christian people of the book. So do not argue with the people of the book except in the best manners. And it goes on to say, "Say to them that we believe in what was revealed to us and what was revealed to you. And our God and your God is the same. And to him we peacefully submit." And so, you know, reading this, there is a very clear teaching that the Jews and the Christians and the people of the book, one, they are not in quote-unquote infidels, and if they do any one of them, including Muslims, if they do certain things, then they will have their reward from God.
Dr. Naqvi, I'm the product of a strange mix. My father's Jewish and my mother was Catholic. And I always marveled at how similar those religions are. I understand that there's one huge difference, the belief that Jesus was or is not the Son of God. However, other than that, they're really very similar. I would imagine that the Muslim faith has a lot more in common with other religions than it has differences. Is that true?
Absolutely. And that's what I'm trying to highlight in the Quran, with or against the Bible, is that the core teachings, the belief in God, the prophets, the angel, the day of judgment are very similar. Sure, there are some minor differences, but the core belief is the same. And then the code of conduct, the kindness, the truthfulness, and loving your neighbors, for example, the golden rule that's from the Gospel of Matthew is very, you can see the same variant throughout. So definitely there's a lot more in common than most people realize. And let me also say that the teachings of the Quran are maybe somewhat of a surprise to some of the Muslims also. Islam is considered one religion, and one religion means from Noah to Abraham down to Prophet Muhammad. And all of these prophets are considered the prophets of Islam simply because Islam is much more global. So if you believe in one God and the last day and you have all these beliefs, then you are a Muslim, a submitter to God. And so people are surprised to find out that the most often named prophet in the Quran is actually Moses. And Mary is mentioned by name more often in the Quran than she is in the Gospel. In fact, there is a chapter named after her in the Quran. She's the only woman, by the way, where a chapter is named after a person. And Jesus Christ is one of the five most exalted prophets, and the other four being Noah, Abraham, Moses, and Prophet Muhammad.
But they refer to him as Ruhollah, right, in the Quran? Is that what they call him?
Yeah, Ruhollah, which means the Spirit of God. And then the Quran does speak about his miracle, including his miraculous birth without a father, and that he cured the lepers and the blinds. He gave life to the dead, and so on and so forth. And he's very, very highly regarded. He and his mother are often named and mentioned side by side in the Quran.
But they don't, unless I'm wrong, they don't refer to him as the Son of God at any point, but he's always considered to be the Spirit of God. Is that correct?
Yes. And then so one thing, this is where there are differences. So the Quran is very clear and does not mince any words that Jesus Christ was not the Son of God. And he was not God. He was not divine. And he also actually goes to a great length to say Muhammad was also not divine. So don't worship him. But also, I just want to also point out when I hear people like Pat Robertson's and Pamela Gellers and Robert Spencer's of the world, I don't see how what they are saying is according to the teachings of the Jesus Christ. The Gospel in the New Testament talks about getting rid of all the bitterness and rage and anger and harsh words and slander. And it says, don't judge others, and you won't be judged, and don't condemn others, and you will not be condemned, and forgive, and you'll be forgiven. So when I hear them spewing hate, I see them in the same light as some of these Muslim clerics who are just preaching hate against each other.